You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.
It's over now. Good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I'm your host, Anna Edwards, and today is the last day of February 2011. I'm not sure I thought we were going to get to 2011, much less the last day of February. But here we are. Tomorrow, March begins. March marches us on into Women's History Month. And we say farewell today to Black History Month, at least in terms of that sort of formal holiday designation and formal activities. But as we all know, Black history, women's history, white history, your history, my history goes on each and every day. So there we are, and here we go. Today, Defenders Live, as usual, is brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And to learn more, please visit our website at defendersfje.org and visit our blog, defendersfje.blogspot.com. You can also give us a call at 804-644-5834, and you can send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. And I hope you'll take advantage of some or all of those ways to connect with what we are up to, because we try to stay connected to what is going on. And today's show is going to be an interesting show because you were gracious enough and I'm sure enthusiastic enough to tune in while Phil Wileto was hosting Defenders Live during the month of January while I was gone. And he took himself off to Wisconsin as part of the Defenders and the United Anti-War Coalition, Anti-War Committee, to check on and support the Wisconsin workers' struggle. And they are still occupying the Capitol building in Madison, Wisconsin. And he has been on the ground there all weekend long. And so we were delighted that we were able to work out the timing so that he could call in and give us a report on what's been going on. So that'll come up in just a minute or two. And we will, all things proceeding smoothly, we will be able to tap into the hinterlands of Wisconsin. I think I drove through Wisconsin once. And as I recall, there were a lot of billboards for cheese and beer. But Wisconsin is a place with a lot more going for it now, in spite of the economy, and with a history that is second to none in terms of the United States. One of the things that is compelling and relevant to the dynamics right now is that Wisconsin has a tremendously high population and an enormous immigration rate back in the turn of the century days, when the German immigrant population is the largest in the country, or was the largest in the country in that region. And they brought along with them several things, one of which was a political and social philosophy of entitlement. And that's entitlement in a good way, not entitlement in the reactionary way that the right wing likes to describe it as they prepare you for cuts, but entitlement in that for those people for whom there needs to be a safety net, there should be a safety net, and that is something that is a responsibility that a nation takes on. So that is a philosophy that came up in Wisconsin, and a lot of programs, a lot of social welfare programs were tried and tested in Wisconsin. At the same time, a lot of social program threats and a lot of social program losses in progress also have taken place in Wisconsin. It seems to be the state for organizations like the Bradley Foundation and others to try out things like welfare reform and school voucher programs. And it's been a very interesting thing to sort of watch that swing back and forth between those who between a strong worker and an union state, and then the attacks on really the most vulnerable in our communities, you know, in the guise of reforming a system in order to save costs. And we know what streamlining is like, and we know that of the problems that have come about as a result of welfare reform. I think we've got Phil on the line. And is that Phil? Are you there?
I am here. How are you, Anna?
Ah, fantastic. This is great. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Okay, terrific. Well, I've just been giving a...
We have telephones here.
Yeah.
It was good, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mentioned that there was cheese and beer, but now you're telling me they have telephones too, so this is very exciting.
Yeah, one of the slogans is, get rid of the rat before we lose all the cheese.
Well, that's a perfect segue. I've been trying to give people a little heads up as to what you're up to in Wisconsin, and so I'm gonna go ahead and say you got there on Friday. Is that right?
Friday afternoon, right?
Yeah. And what was your mission? What are you doing there? What was the purpose of this visit?
As you know, since you're in the national leadership body, the Defenders are an affiliate of the United National Anti-War Committee, which is a fairly new national anti-war coalition that grew out of a mass conference of some 800 people in Albany, New York last July that seven of us went up to from the Defenders. And it's called for large marches, rallies in New York City and San Francisco on April 9th and 10th, and we'll be going up to attend those. And that's to oppose the war, all the wars in overseas, in Iraq and Afghanistan and Yemen and Somalia and so on and so forth,
right,
and bring those dollars back home where they're needed here for social services and jobs and help out the housing crisis and all.
And that's and the relationship between that and Wisconsin becomes?
Well, there's a new governor, Scott Walker, who was just inaugurated in January, and he immediately unveiled a budget proposal that included stripping the public worker unions of all their rights to bargain for a better contract. Essentially breaking the unions, taking away all their ability to defend their members. And this is a very strong union state. And he came in just a declaration of war. What does that have to do with anti-war issues? Well, Wisconsin has a deficit of $3.9 billion, billion with a B, and the governor is saying that's the reason why he has to tame or crush or break the unions, however he might want to describe it, because they have to stop paying these outrageously high wages and benefits that allow people to live a decent life.
Right.
And Wisconsin, in the last 10 years, Wisconsin taxpayers have paid out $18.5 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan alone. That's four times the present deficit.
That's right.
So you can see this is something that the politicians don't want to talk about, but the $1 trillion overall that has gone to pay for the war, these two wars, is one of the major reasons why we have a budget deficits. It's not responsible for the economic crisis. That's a crisis of capitalism itself. But if these wars hadn't been initiated, we would not be in the same situation we're in, including in Virginia, where Virginians have paid out, I think it's $30 billion.
Right.
Since the first Iraq War in 2001.
Right.
So when we say money for jobs, not for war, there's a very concrete basis for saying that.
It's a direct correlation between the funds that have been lost to communities to spend on those critical needs as opposed to these ventures.
When we say, money for human services, not for war, what are those services?
Right.
Well, it's teachers, it's firefighters, it's daycare workers, social workers, public defenders, people who clean the parks and pick up the garbage, and these are all public service workers. Now, in Virginia, we're one of two states, along with North Carolina, where by law for local governments to negotiate a contract with a public workers union. Only 2 out of 50 states have that provision. So we're in the worst situation where public workers don't have a voice at all in terms of negotiations. But so, you know, in terms of the anti-war issue, it's very clear that if we weren't putting out all this money for wars, that the state and local governments would be in much better shape. But then on a deeper level, the effect of this struggle in Wisconsin has immediate national implications because of who is behind it. If you want to go into that a little bit. I was asked to come out to Wisconsin to represent the United National Anti-War Committee, along with one other fellow named Ashley Smith from Vermont. And we brought a great big banner that said, "Stop the War on Unions, Muslims, Immigrants, and Communities of Color." And one of the only anti-war banners at the huge rally of 70,000 people on Saturday. And what we were trying to do was encourage the peace forces in Wisconsin to come out more directly in their own name to show these workers that the peace movement is on their side.
Right.
You know, and Tea Party came out on one day last week, and they had the estimates range from 5,000 to 10,000, which would be a huge number of people, except that there were 78,000 people.
Well, that's what I was going to say. With 70,000 people in a city the size of Madison, Wisconsin, I mean, if Richmond had a protest with 70,000 people in it, I think they would be calling out the National Guard. That's an enormous amount of people that, you know, we're not used to.
100,000 yesterday.
Yeah, and we're not used to seeing numbers like that, except in maybe Washington, D.C., or the larger cities, New York and Los Angeles, for demonstrations like this. So this is really significant. The state capitol building is, in fact, occupied.
And still occupied. Just to give you a brief overview, when the governor proposed his budget, he was planning on ramming it through the state legislature in about 4 days. He had it all set up. And the unions started to come out to protest, and as the information about the implications of this budget, which, by the way, includes slashing Medicaid benefits for the poorest people in the state. I don't know all the details, but when people started to read, they went, "Wait a minute, this affects me too." And more groups started to spontaneously come out to the Capitol to testify and then to protest and finally to occupy the Capitol. Thousands of people have moved into the state Capitol building and have been there for 15 days. And yesterday was the day the police had announced they would clear it out. And the deadline came and went at 4 o'clock, and they renegotiated and said the protesters could stay another day because the public sentiment is so strong.
Right.
Another important aspect of this, besides the absolute incredible solidarity, I mean, there's so much support for the unions here because everybody sees how it will affect them, whether they're in a union or not.
Right.
It will reduce their standards of living drastically.
Right.
There's so much support that last week, Governor Scott Walker went out to the opening of a fancy new restaurant called, of all things, The Merchant. And when he walked in the restaurant, the patrons started booing him.
That's excellent.
The management finally came up to him and asked him to leave because he was causing a disturbance. These are his people.
Yeah.
These are people in his level. The stores all around Madison have signs supporting the workers. They went and the cops slept in the state capitol building in solidarity with the protesters two nights ago. They're not even ticketing people for parking violations downtown because they know they're there to support the union struggle. And they're not affected. The police and the firefighters are not affected by this budget. They're exempted. And yet they've come out in solidarity.
I was just going to say, I think the description of the various layers of public sector workers and those who are supporting them is something that we saw a little bit here in Richmond on Saturday. There was a demonstration down at the Bell Tower in the Capitol, and I think most people were thinking that maybe 50 or 60 people would come, but in fact, just about 500 people came to that demonstration. It only lasted an hour, but again, across the board, you saw there were teachers. There were, you know, people that I knew who had been, you know, lucratively employed, who the economy has downsized, and just people from different layers of the community, both public and private sector, who recognize the threat that a bill like this has in another state and what it could mean for workers across the country.
I think you put your finger on it. It's more than just showing solidarity. It's understanding that this affects us as well. Now, there's a very important aspect to this whole situation, and that's that Walker is not just an individual right-wing politician.
Of course not.
He was supported in his election bid by the David and Charles, I think it's David and Charles, I know one of them is David,
right.
Koch brothers, K-O-C-H. The Koch brothers own Koch Industries, which is the largest privately owned company in the country,
yeah.
Based on various forms of energy. And they funded his campaign directly and through the National Governors Association. And they're extremely right-wing. This is the group that funds American for Prosperity, that funds the Tea Party movement.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, in one of the local papers here, the Isthmus, that's sort of the equivalent of the Style Weekly in Richmond, they ran a long article about the protests, of course, they all are. But it mentioned that the Tea Party protest that was held here in Madison 3 or 4 days ago was organized by a group out of Virginia. Now, that's Americans for Prosperity.
Yeah.
And remember, the Tea Party movement in Virginia is one of the largest in the country. The October conference they held at the Greater Richmond Convention Center was some 2,500 people, 2,800 people, by far the largest held in any state. These are the people who are promoting, you know, reactionary laws in the state capital.
Right.
So, you know, it's just the most extreme wing of the, you know, the corporate class,
right,
that runs this country.
Right.
But it's very politically active. And what is happening here in Wisconsin is being picked up in terms of the attacks on the unions. It's being picked up by governors in Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey. And that's why on Saturday, in addition to the protest in Richmond, and the AFL-CIO held a protest in Williamsburg the same day, there were protests in all state capitals in all 50 states.
Right.
Yeah, so it has produced an onslaught against the working class across the country that is being met by an upsurge of labor and community opposition. We are in an entirely new stage of political struggle in this country than we were 2 weeks ago.
The states that you listed, it's sort of particularly unnerving in a way, because those are states that historically have been extremely strong union states.
That's right.
And to know that it's almost as though these people have been lying in wait for their opportunity. And it then becomes a little distressing to not see maybe as much support from the unions as we'd like to see, given what's happening here. I feel like in a way I saw more activity around the Employee Free Choice Act than we're seeing in defense of this, except on the ground in Wisconsin.
Well, I mean, unions across the country, unions here that have been feuding for years have come together. There's a great deal of solidarity and unity in Wisconsin, and I think that's spreading as well. I want to say one thing about why someone who does not belong to a union might be interested in this struggle.
Right.
As you mentioned, you know, earlier in the program, Wisconsin is the home of the Bradley Foundation.
Right.
And the Bradley Foundation is very similar to the Koch brothers in that they are, in addition to having deep pockets, they're very politically active. And in fact, they're the leading right-wing foundation in the country and have influenced the other ones like Koch to play a more political role. Well, in the mid-90s, Wisconsin was the testing ground for welfare reform that led to the overturn of AFDC, Aid to Families with Dependent Children,
mm-hmm.
That was signed in 95 by a good liberal President Clinton. And Bradley was behind that. And within 1 year of the implementation of what they called Wisconsin Works, or W-2, that was the model for welfare reform around the country, infant mortality in the black community in Milwaukee went up 37%.
37%?
37%. Babies who would have survived died as a result of welfare reform in Wisconsin. And I got that from an African-American woman doctor who was appointed by Governor Tommy Thompson to sit on a state commission on African-American infant mortality. She was radicalized because of this. And in Indiana, a state legislator has introduced a bill that would eliminate child labor laws.
The things that you're describing sound like things that would be taking place at the turn of the 19th century. And we're talking about, you know, we're in the 22nd century, I think.
I told you the conversation I had with our youngest boy yesterday. He's 13. And I told him what was happening and what the governor was trying to do. And he said, oh, you mean like the 19th century?
Right. And he's...
Yeah. He got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in other words, there's a whole political, economic, and social agenda that is being promoted by the right wing in this country. And the foundations are the mechanism that they use to influence politics.
Right.
It's not coming from these foundations in particular. It's coming from the whole corporate class as a whole. Break the unions, eliminate the social services, destroy civil rights. It's an attempt, you know, and the attempt to build a Tea Party rally at the state capitol was really an attempt to intimidate the workers.
Right.
I mean, that's not just a right-wing movement. That's a fascist movement. You know, if they had 10,000 Tea Partiers and we only had 5,000 workers, we might not be occupying the capitol today.
Right. No,
they could have might have swept us off the street. So what I'm trying to alert folks in Virginia is that what is happening in Wisconsin is just the opening shot of what is now a national assault on the living standards of all working people that will have the most devastating effects on the black community, Latino community, all communities of color, as it always does.
Right, right.
And we need to do everything we can, not only to show some solidarity for the struggle in Wisconsin, but to fight back in a more determined way in Virginia to turn back the assaults. And our solution, of course, has been the Virginia People's Assembly, a statewide coalition of labor, community, religious, peace, student, organizations, women, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, everybody, to form a united front, and we've held protests at the General Assembly 3 years in a row now.
Right.
We need to greatly expand that type of formation so that we have something to fight back with.
No, that's exactly right. And there is a website, the VAPeoplesAssembly.org, for information on the last gathering. But the other thing, we've got just about 3 minutes left, and I'd like you to, I don't know if you can very quickly just sort of highlight what you did on Sunday, because I know that you did a couple other things. And then I need to go ahead and talk a little bit about April 9th.
And March 19th?
And March 19th, and in fact, the Slave Trail Commission meeting for this Thursday. So maybe you better not talk about Sunday. Let's just go straight to it.
Took a lot of video and footage, and we'll be and pictures, and I'll be writing up a report, and we'll be getting that up on our website and out to our email list. And of course, this will all be highlighted in the next issue of the Virginia Defender, which will come out about mid-April.
Okay. Very good. And then if people want more information about the Bring the Troops Home Now march and rally in New York City at noon on April 9th, you can go to, I believe it's UNAC, unacpeace.org, and call the defenders at 804-644-5834 to get more details and find out how you can be involved. And then just a quick reminder that the Slave Trail Commission meeting is happening this Thursday. Dr. Michael Blakey will be the featured guest. This is an open-to-the-public meeting, which actually all of them are. You'll find more information on our website about that as well, defendersfje.org. Phil, you got any last words from Wisconsin?
Well, it's just been a tremendous privilege to be up here. I lived in Milwaukee for 7 years before I moved to Richmond 10 years ago. And one of the things we did was we had a demonstration outside the state capitol on economic issues, and we marched inside to the governor's office. There were only about 40 of us, and of course we got thrown out. But before we left, we shook our fists at the governor's office, and we said, there's only a few of us now, so you can force us out, but someday we'll be back with thousands, and we'll surround this building, and we'll take over the state capitol, and we'll force you to do what's right by the people. And I don't want to claim personal credit for what's going on in Wisconsin, but to see 100,000 workers surrounding the capitol with thousands of people occupying inside.
That's right.
Firefighters, police officers,
right.
Teachers, social service workers. I'm telling you, this has been a wonderful experience.
These are our bread and butter people. These are our friends and neighbors. This is everyone you know. All right. Thank you, Phil, very much for reporting from Wisconsin today and giving us a sense of what it's like there. And I'd like to also point out that we posted a video that Phil brought to our attention called American Workers versus Multibillionaires, and that's on our blog, defendersfje.blogspot.com. It's a hip-hop video, and boy, does he get to the point and make it very effectively. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to thank Julia and Taylor for making this broadcast possible, and Harvey for ushering us in as usual. I want to thank our staff for getting us through the power outage that we had. I don't know if anybody else noticed, but it went black here for a minute, and our team gets on it every time. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Defenders Live, and we will be back with you next week. Same time, same station, same good noise. Thanks, and keep up the struggle.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.